The question now is, with how loud a voice will we glorify God? For those that get the Good News magazine, the last issue just arrived, article by Mr. Robin Weber, entitled, Glorifying God with a Loud Voice. What a message. In the last sentence there I read to you, that's the question now. And I can't answer that for you. You decide. You can answer that. Let's turn and look at the passage, Luke chapter 17, that he writes about in this article.
And begin here on this Feast of Trumpets. To dig deep. Luke chapter 17, and we pick it up in verse 11. It's about a Samaritan. How I appreciated that Mr. Babb talked about the Samaritan lady. There's many lessons we can learn from those people that are recorded in the words of God. But here, now it happened as he, Jesus, went up to Jerusalem that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. And then as he entered a certain village, there met him 10 men who were lepers. And they stood afar off. And that was not only the custom and the requirement, but that was the statute. That was, you know, they were to be separated. The article says they were to stay off, you know, I think he says 150 feet was the nearest they were to draw near to any of the people around them. But they lifted up their voices and said, Jesus, Master. Now, how loud would you have to lift your voice to be heard intelligibly at 150 feet? Must not have hurt their lungs. That's good. They got the message across. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. So when he saw, he said to them, Go, show yourselves to the priests. And so it was that as they went, they were cleansed. And now one of them, when he saw that he was healed, returned and with a loud voice glorified God and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. So Jesus answered and said, Were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? Where would we put ourselves in the count? I know where I would have been. Not too many years ago, I was always the back seat, back row, farther back, out of sight was where I was comfortable. I learned that God has a different purpose for me. And for some reason, then I'm here instead of you. But we're all in this together. He said to him, Arise and go your way. Your faith has made you well. How important that faith is. What a beautiful picture. So in this story here, Mr. Weber says, it's the story of 10 lepers healed by Christ, and its focus centers on the offense of ingratitude. But the greater story for us today is how to truly express thankfulness for God's intervention in our lives beyond our initial encounter with Him. Yes, at some point, we began to realize God was working with us and He began to change us. He didn't change. He changed us. He worked in us. This was a Samaritan. Mr. Weber goes on. He said, of all people, one ridiculed and marginalized by those professing to follow biblical religion in that day. We came out of many walks of life. We were changed from many backgrounds. So towards the end, he says, our appreciation might commence with a verbal thank you, but this gratitude needs to remain and shape every motive in our heart, every thought in our brain, every reasoning in our mind, and actions that are witnessed by all. witnessed by all. That's sobering. But that's good. That's God's plan. That's God's way. See, this Samaritan, he recognized what had happened. He knew the difference from probably before he had the leprosy and what it felt to suddenly realize he had this disease that made him an outcast, that he was put outside. He was untouchable, unapproachable. And then that quickly to be healed. And it struck deep. He had appreciation. And so the joy that he felt, the joy became greater than his inhibitions, whatever that might have been. You know, this article was surely written for me. Not only for the purpose of this message, but it was written for me. I appreciate it very much. See, Jesus Christ recognized an opportunity. Let's look in Psalms and chapter 50. And we follow the same train here that was experienced by these 10 lepers, but only expressed by one of them. Psalm chapter 50, and for time's sake, let's just pick it up in verse 14, telling of how great God is and that He owns everything. You know, He doesn't need our holy day offerings. We need to give our holy day offerings. But He goes on, He says, Psalm 50 in verse 14, offer to God thanksgiving and pay your vows to the Most High. When that is what's in our heart. And then, wow, He says, call upon me in the day of trouble. So these 10 lepers see Jesus, the healer, the miracle worker, and they raise their voice and call out to Him. They want to be heard. They're desperate. Call on me in the day of trouble. What's your trouble? We don't have time for my troubles. We each have troubles. But Jesus recognized the opportunity to fulfill this passage. Call upon me when you're in trouble and I will deliver you. And so He did. All 10 of them. And you shall glorify me, the rest of the verse. How easy it is to take part of the message and leave the other undone. I think Jesus challenged others about that in His time. To offer first and then to cry out, and God delivers, and that glorifies God. To cry out, however loud they meant it. How loud, how much do you mean it when you pray? Or when you sing? Or blow the shofar? Thank you. Yes, we needed that shofar. I needed that today. See, down in verse 23, says, whoever offers praise glorifies me. And to him who orders his conduct aright, to call on God, to be delivered, and then to go back and glorify God, amongst all the other things we're encouraged and offered to do, he says, I will show the Yeshua of God. I will show the salvation. That salvation is, in the Hebrew, Yeshua, Jesus Christ. What a fitting thing for this day. The day that we look forward to seeing that salvation, that Yeshua. Now, we experience salvation in our daily lives. It kind of ebbs and flows like the water that Mr. Babb was talking about. Some days we feel it more, some days we feel it less. It's still counting your sermonette. Can I just leave the clock go? If I go late, does somebody stick their tongue out at me or, you know, bring me to a close here? But this is interesting. Jesus saw an opportunity to fulfill this passage in Psalms when these lepers came up. And it's, to me, it's a message that says, if we're full of gratitude, where's the evidence? How does God know? How do those around know? I don't remember the name of the publication I used to get years ago. It was a little newsy thing full of encouraging things. Anyway, one of the sayings was that if you feel good, let your face know. Smile a little bit. Share it. We all have something to share. And I think then that our gratitude and our response is proportional to how important it is, how meaningful it is to us. See, that Samaritan had a life-changing experience. Actually, a couple of them. I would expect that he didn't start out a leper, but somewhere he changed. And then he changed again. It was a life-changing, and he responded in measure to his desire to be delivered from it. And so that's what I read in this article. The question now is, with how loud a voice will we glorify God? That's a challenge for me. I can raise my voice standing up here, but I'm not a loud person. Maybe I need corrected on that. You know, I had a life-changing experience. Most of you know that. I was rebaptized in a river with flowing water just almost 2 years ago. I crashed that helicopter and went underwater. Thoughts flashed through my mind, and I thought, this is silly. Get out of here. So there I was, buckled into a four-point shoulder harness underwater, not knowing which way is up. And I said, this is silly. Get out of here. I had a broken arm. My back was crushed. I stood up. I don't know who stood me up. I don't know who unbuckled my shoulder and lap belt. Usually getting in and out of the seat of that aircraft, you got to take things off getting in. It wasn't there. The door where on the opposite side of the aircraft where I had to stand up was just gone. It wasn't in the way anymore. I was raised in newness of life. See, I didn't have a near-death experience, as I've told people. I had a near-life experience. And that has made all the difference. How's it in Fiddler on the Roof? To life! I'd have slunk in a hole not long ago to stand up in front of a group of people, even beloved brethren, and to talk like that. Psalm 116 is my psalm, and it tells similarly this story of the Samaritan. And my story, I claim it as my psalm. Actually, in the complete Jewish Bible, it reads a little different, and I like the way it's written there, but we'll look at it here in the New King James. Psalm 116. I love the Lord because He has heard. He heard my voice and my supplications. And I think if we would compare, we would see passages in here that parallel Jonah's words as well when he was sunken in a fish. I was in a different sinking. Because He has inclined His ear to me, therefore I will call upon Him as long as I live. The pains of death encompassed me. The pangs of Sheol laid hold of me. I found trouble and sorrow. And then I called upon the name of the Lord. Oh, Lord, I implore you, deliver my soul. I felt that way somewhat before my first baptism. I'm sure we each have our version of turning from our old ways and knowing what a wretched person we were, and even more wretched for realizing what we were, but rejoicing in knowing what we would become because of what God was doing. Gracious is the Lord and righteous. Yes, our God is merciful. The Lord preserves the simple. I was simple that day. I was brought low. Plumb under the water, and He saved me. And then this passage, this next verse, is mine and yours if you will take it. Return to your rest, O my soul. In the worst catastrophe in my life, there was a comfort I couldn't understand. Once my head broke the surface of the water, something told me, I just knew it was going to be all right. I didn't know about the other two people in the aircraft. It was obvious what had happened to the aircraft. I soon knew, but just something told me it was all right. And that's a feeling that never goes away. I think we're facing incredible times. I think we need comfort. I think we need to find these passages that will help us through. Verse 12, what shall I render to the Lord for all His benefits toward me? What does He want me to do? What does He want you to do? I will take the cup of Yeshua, the cup of salvation. I will call upon the name of the Lord and He will deliver me and that will glorify Him. Isn't that what we read in Psalms 50? I will pay my vows to the Lord now in the presence of all of you, all His people. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of His saints. So the old Fred died twice. He really needed dying. Thank God. O Lord, truly I am your servant. I am your servant, the son of your maidservant. You have loosed my bonds. And I will offer to you the sacrifice of thanksgiving and call upon the name of the Lord. And I will pay my vows to the Lord now in the presence of all His people. In the courts of the Lord's house, in the midst of you, O Jerusalem, hallelujah. Wow. But today is not about me. Today is not about the Samaritan. Today is a day of loud acclamations, a day of trumpets for you and for me. But they're for you. Trumpets are for you. Yes, there's warning in trumpets. Leviticus 23. Let's go back to the beginning and find the roots, if you will, of this memorial. And let's understand it some. I love clarity. I love taking things right down to their basic elements. I'm challenged to communicate what seems so simple to me. But Leviticus 23 is the listing of God's holy days. And verse 23 says, then spoke the Lord to Moses, saying, He spoke, told Moses, and then He said, Moses, you speak to the children of Israel. And so we count ourselves in there, right? We've been grafted into the tree of Israel, that olive tree. We're part of Israel now in that way. Saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of loud acclamations. I know it says blowing of trumpets. A holy convocation, and you shall do no customary work on it, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. Loud acclamations. And we've probably, most of us, heard this before, that there's actually no word trumpet there. It's the making of noise that is the word in Hebrew, teruah. It means shouts of joy, usually, not always. There are times in Scripture where it very clearly points to the clangor, the noise of trumpets, including trumpets of alarm. But most of the time, and the multitude of times that this word is used, it means loud acclamations or shouts of joy, sometimes shouts of alarm. I respect King James. I respect Strong's dictionary. But you know, they were written thousands of years after Moses wrote these. I respect Jewish custom, but again, they've had thousands of years of influence. I respect our custom. To me, this is still the Feast of Trumpets. But we come even later. So I find I need a multitude of counsel to try to find what it is that God would like to teach us through these things. And today, we'll just look at one little part of it as we're looking at it. This is only one part that we heard some on Sabbath. We heard some in the sermonette. Other times we hear other messages. But I believe in a multitude of counsel. You know, resources are good. All the scriptural tools that we use to study and commentaries and dictionaries and all that goes with us, with them. But those are all resources. There's somebody's writing on the original source. See, the source is best where we can glean from it and learn from it. So this Hebrew word, teruah, comes from another Hebrew word meaning ruah, and they're used in various passages. Let's look enough there of Leviticus 23 for the moment. We'll be back. But Psalm 81, Psalms in chapter 81, there's a beautiful passage. And while you're getting there, then find Job in chapter 38. People's response to what God is doing. Psalm chapter 81, verse 1, sing aloud to God our strength and make a joyful shout to the God of Jacob. Sing aloud. And we do that. I love our hymns. And I love the energy that some put into the hymns. That they really let the singing express their heart. They're less inhibited. I need to make myself do that. I know sometimes I think people in front of me cringe a little bit when I try to sing out. And I appreciate Mr. Stitt and Mr. Huppert and all of you that are patient with me over there. Nobody turns around to comment on my loud noises. They're not always in tune. But I have in my heart a need to get out loud praises. And I find some of the root of it here, where it came from. It's not mine. It's what was given to me. Sing aloud. And so that means to sing. Job in chapter 38, speaking about the creation, God speaking to Job. Verse 7, where were you, Job, when the morning stars sang together? That same sing, the same word to sing out. And what must have it been like, that choir, the morning stars singing? I don't know that we'll ever match that in this lifetime, but there's a lesson there. Psalm 81, verse 1, again it says, then make a joyful shout. And that's the word ruah, from which we get teruah. And again in Job 38, and verse 7, all the sons of God shouted for joy. They weren't inhibited. They didn't have, you know, the old English stiff upper lip. They didn't have that German control yourself attitude. You know, I'm about half and half, so I'm really encumbered by it. But God can erase those things. He can enable us to go beyond those things, to be better than that, to sing aloud, to ruah. So I just thought it was interesting. Those two passages show a natural response to what God has done in a major way. So let's go back then to Leviticus, but this time in Leviticus in chapter 25. And I confess, I didn't totally understand this point until preparing for this message. Leviticus 25 picks it up in the middle about the year of Jubilee. The Jews believe, many of us believe, that we just finished the seventh year of release, and now all indications are that we're beginning the year of Jubilee. Actually, it'll be when the trumpet is sounded on the Day of Atonement. But let's look here at what it says about this Jubilee, and we want to just read Leviticus 25 and verse 9. There's much more to be said about it. Then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, you shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land. But it actually says, you shall make the shofar to Teruah. So it's the trumpet, not of Jubilee. The next verse, it uses the word that's Jubilee. But it's the trumpet of joyful shouting, joyful acclamations is what that word is. And so I got to looking, and there are so many passages in Job and Amos and Zephaniah, many others, where it makes it clear that it's talking about the shofar and the teruah, the loud acclamations. Not that one is doing the other, but both of them at the same time. You know, to me, the feast of, when I hear the name, the Feast of Trumpets, then it means that I sit and I listen to the shofar being blown. Or I listen to some special music where somebody praises God. Or I listen to a recording, you know, of some of the inspiring trumpet music. But I'm getting it secondhand. The Feast of Trumpets says that to me. But this memorial of loud acclamations, as it actually says in Leviticus 23, where it's the first instructions to keep the feast, it's a memorial of loud acclamations. That's something that I participate in. I can make loud and joyful noises. I can express how much gratitude by how much energy I put into it. I can remember the blessings that I want to express. But I can also anticipate the blessings of this day when Jesus Christ does return with the trump of God. There is very much a message of trumpets in this day. But in Leviticus 23, it says this is a memorial of loud acclamations. And that's something that each one of us can participate in. We can remember what God has done. And we can anticipate, or as I like to say, we can remember forward into what God is going to do. But yes, God did instruct Moses to make two silver trumpets. Let's look at that as well in Numbers chapter 10. But, you know, I apologize. I will get to Numbers chapter 10, but let's go back. I said I would, back to Leviticus 23 for a moment. And verse 24 and 25. And somebody stick their tongue out at me now and then, make me smile and laugh and lighten up a little bit. Because to me, all these things that God offers are, you know, isn't that amazing that He makes offerings to us? All these things that He commands us to do for our good and our joy. Most of you know that I'm a firm believer in I get to do this. I don't have to do any of it. I firmly believe that everything God commands is an I get to. And I find that the more I study it, the more I dig into it, and the more we share, you share with me and I share with you, the more I want to. I think we're all becoming more Christ-like as we do that. Anyway, Leviticus 23. This was obviously God telling Moses to tell Israel, and through Israel, we're hearing those words to us. It's to be a Sabbath rest on the first day of the 7th month, and here we are. I think we're pretty close on that. We're all together. It's to be a memorial. It's not just my memorial. Thank you, Robert. That's perfect. It's not just my memorial of being resurrected twice out of a watery grave. It's not just the Samaritan's memorial. What's your memorial? What makes you want to glorify God with a loud voice? I know you want to. I'm giving you permission to do that. Not in the clangoring, noisy things that we see happen in the world around us or others might do. But God's culture is to express from our heart. Didn't Jesus say, out of the heart comes our words? He didn't talk specifically about the volume, but I believe volume comes as well from the heart. You see, it's not to be pandemonium. I truly believe that. But it's to be a day of loud acclamations. At least we sing out. We can do that, can't we? And that's not pandemonium. That's not discord. Well, as long as you're not listening too close to my loud. But all of us together, I think we make beautiful music. God, I believe, will respond to us the more we show the intensity of our response to Him. That's my observation. Some of my biggest challenges, He's finally relieved after years of praying until I got to the point where I just fell on my face crying out loud. And as a man, I don't mind saying that, you know. And pleading with God as loud as I could and as on my face. And that's when God says, okay. I don't know about for you. I just know that the old King James calling these holy convocations to be solemn assemblies, I understand what it meant then, but it sounds awful, awful Catholic to me. You know, awful universal, that's what others do, but that's not what God does. God expresses Himself, and we can each fulfill the complete statute. We can, you know, the statute says that it's for us, you know, it's for the people. And I found that fascinating, back to the article. He says, the question now is, with how loud a voice will you glorify God? Did you notice what's on the cover? God's message, the time is now. That's today. I said that article was written for me. Wow. I love it. We can each fulfill the entire statute that says to keep this Feast of Trumpets or keep the Feast of the Loud Acclamations as a memorial. What's the memorial in your background that you have been delivered from by God and that now here we are today when we're all together in a most safe place we could be with God and Jesus Christ fellowshipping with us and we love each other? What could be safer than to be right here, right now? What could be safer than expressing our thanks, as that scripture says, as that story that Mr. Weber wrote? Okay, I said I'd get the numbers. See, the Feast of Trumpets is for each one of us, for all of us. Numbers chapter 10, there is clear instructions that there are to be trumpets blown on this day. Numbers chapter 10, verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, make two silver trumpets for yourself, and you shall make them of hammered work, and you shall use them for calling the assembly, for directing the movement of the camps. Interesting that these trumpets then were not just noises going off around or waking people up. It's not, what they call it in the army, reveille, whatever it is that they would get people up in the morning. They used to do that when I was in Boy Scouts. There's something about it that is very memorable. But these were trumpet noises, loud blasts of the trumpet that the people recognized. There's a lot that isn't recorded here, but somehow all the people were taught and demonstrated that this is the noise for gathering, you know, as a congregation. This is the noise of the trumpet for just the leaders to gather. This is the noise of the trumpet to assemble, to get up, unpack, and get to hiking again, get going across the desert. There were many different sounds from the trumpet, but there's a lot behind it that we're not told how it happened. But when we hear beautiful music, I so appreciate the pianists that accompany us on the hymns, because it helps to keep me going along. But the skill, the heart that it takes to be prepared to do that. There was something about these trumpets that amount of work had been put into it, that those that were blowing it didn't make the wrong sound and call the wrong assembly or send them in the wrong direction or send out a warning when it was good news, or the other way around. When they blow both of them, all the assembly shall gather before you at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. But if they blow only one, then the leaders, the heads of the divisions of Israel, shall gather to you. And when you sound the advance, see, there's a different sound that means advance. The camps that lay on the east shall begin their journey. And when you sound the advance the second time, people had to pay attention and, oh, was this the first time? Is this the second time? Is this the third time? I'm sure they went all the way around. All the camps were up and going. Verse 7, when the congregation is to be gathered together, you shall blow, but not the sound of advance. So it tells us there's a difference. We just don't know. I don't know. Maybe you know. And then, verse 8, the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow the trumpets. And these shall be to you as an ordinance forever throughout your generation. So those two silver trumpets that meant so many things were to be blown by the priests. And the priests were under Moses' direction. And the priests, you know, had a huge responsibility on all their things that they were to do. They took it very serious to be prepared to sound the right trumpet call at the right time. Verse 9, when you go to war in your land against the enemy who oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, and you will be remembered before the Lord your God, and you will be saved from your enemies. That sounds kind of like the story of the 10 lepers, doesn't it? Again. Cry out, and I will remember you, I will hear you, and I will deliver you. Verse 10, and also in the day of your gladness, in your appointed feasts, here we are. This is a glad, a joyful, a rejoicing time. At the beginning of your months, here we are. You shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings, over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, and they shall be a memorial for you before your God. And who is that God? He says, I am the Lord your God, Yahweh your God, Jehovah your God. I am your God. It says in verse 9, when you're faced with an enemy. We're a long ways from where this was written. But enemy, again, I like to dig in. The word in Hebrew actually means a time or a place of tightness, of constriction, of adversity, somewhere that you're cramped in and you want to be loosened from. Like a cow in a squeeze chute. Many other examples. Being oppressed, that word, when this place of tightness oppresses you, it means to bind or to squeeze. To be in distress. I can see that this enemy that I'm faced with could be a person. It could be a government. I think the trumpets of alarm of what our government is doing and where it's going, that we each need to be alarmed. I believe that. I think it's obvious to us. But maybe our place of tightness or restriction is in our health or our finances. Maybe it's some heartache in our life that is just hard to get past. But then it says, when you face that, then you should ruah. Make that loud noise. Sound the alarm to cry out. Yes, out of pain, out of fear, but also out of anticipation. See, it's a memorial. We know that the testimonies show that God delivers, that He will deliver. So when we sound out our cry of alarm, our ruah, in pain, there should be an expectation of deliverance. Maybe not reachable, but there's a hope and a joy connected to that. Because God is far greater than our moments of constriction, than our enemies, than our pains. God hears. He says, you do this, you blow that trumpet. Verse 9, where'd I go? Somebody move my page. And you will be remembered before the Lord your God. He'll hear your cry. He'll hear that ruah. And He'll say, oh, yes, my people, they're in tightness. They're in pain. They're in danger. Most of my dangers are up in here. We each have our challenge. My people are in distress. And He says, God will save us from our afflictions. There's so much in the feast of trumpets, of loud acclamations, of crying out to God. You know, in Psalm chapter 50, we read that. David wrote that for us. In Luke chapter 17, we read that story about the lepers and the one Samaritan. But they did. They cried out. We can make our prayers. Yeah, if you want to do it in your closet and nobody's around, don't be afraid to make your prayers like a trumpet, to blast them out when you're in pain and need of deliverance. Do it with expectation. Expectation. And see with your mind and your heart your deliverance. Remember what you've been delivered from so far. And expect that God will hear again. Loud acclamations of gratitude, because that glorifies God. You know, I think that, like, you know, some of the offerings were lifted up and were wave offerings, like the smoke that went up in a pleasant aroma, that the incense that went up in a cloud, like our prayers in detail. I think our loud acclamations brings us to God's attention, raises us up to His focus. And it encourages one another that when we know that we're each struggling, but we can see somebody cry out, then we know we can cry out. We can cry out. Numbers 10 and verse 10. In the day of your gladness, in your appointed feast, at the beginning of your months, you shall blow the trumpets. Today, this is the Feast of Trumpets, to blow them over our sacrifices. And it's a memorial again. God will remember, but also we will remember. And that will increase our appreciation for what He has done and what He is doing. It's a memorial. It's a reason to rejoice. And I think God will accept our sacrifices, our offerings, when they really come from our heart. And He can see that and He can hear that. You know, trumpeting over the... We didn't have the shofar when we collected the offering. None of us made a show of putting our envelope in the basket. Jesus made that clear, that it's the hypocrites that announce their alms. They might have got that from back here in Numbers 10:10. That, well, we're supposed to blow the trumpet. Maybe it's so others will see how good I am. I think they lost part of the connection there. They called attention. They focused on themselves. Rather, the call of attention is to God. That out of God's blessings, we have to give, to return an offering. We magnify Him, and we know that when we magnify him, that he will exalt us if we're patient, and we are patient. You know, Paul gives us one more vital lesson that I would like to get through. Let's look in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. That's a shaky glass, but the water didn't shake out. I want to go 1 Corinthians chapter 14. I think in Hebrews it says that, you know, in the temple there were ordinances of divine service that they were very explicitly given in how to worship God in the temple services. And then it comes to the New Testament and the temple's gone and now synagogues are gone and history has left many things behind. We have a few instructions like in 1 Corinthians chapter 14 about what we should do in our assemblies. And we try to glean out and do the best we can. But there's a point in here that really fits this message today. And I think you're probably ahead of me. I do. Well, there's actually two messages. You know, God is not the author of confusion. And in the last verse, verse 40, it says, "Let all things be done decently and in order." And I have to confess, in my German-English introverted way of looking at things, I got an idea what decently and in order should look like and should sound like. And when people seem to push those bounds, and here I am pushing those bounds, it's uncomfortable. But I'm not caring anymore. I was raised to newness of life twice. I want God's culture and God's expressions and God's gifts. But I want to do it right to please him. We see lots of pandemonium that people do. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 7. Speaking about things that Paul dealt with, that was challenged in the groups getting together, about people speaking in tongues. He says, "Even things without life, whether a flute or harp, when they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sounds, how will it be known what is piped or played?" What's the special music of it if it's just cacophony? But it was music that we heard on the piano. It was music that we heard as we took up the offering. It made sense. It fit. It was appropriate. It was inspiring. It was humbling. And when we sing another hymn, we'll get to participate. And whatever's in our heart, I hope that you can let it out. But verse 8 then, "For if the trumpet makes an uncertain sound, who will prepare himself for battle?" See, I titled this sermon, for those that like titles, "A Certain Sound." Paul says, what if the trumpet, back to Numbers 10. See, if the priests that sounded those trumpets to gather, to send them on, or to send out warnings, or to thank God with the offerings, or call God's remembrance and help, what if they mixed them up every week? What would the people do? If the trumpets don't make a certain, a specific, a known and understood and agreed to sound, whoever decided, I don't know. But it was a means of communication that everybody had come to recognize and to appreciate and to live by or die by. It was so important. So important to have a certain sound. And then Paul goes on in verse 9. He says, "So likewise you and me, unless we utter by the tongue words easy to understand, how will it be known what is spoken?" We don't want to just speak into the air, make noises, waste your time if I was doing that. See, very certain, it's specific, it's agreed upon. Very certain, it's understood, it's known to all, it's recognized, it's identifiable and very distinct, so they didn't confuse one with the other. It was very definite in that it was given promptly and, you know, with their might. They weren't hesitant. They weren't inhibited in blowing the trumpets. They wanted the message to get out for the good of all the people. There was clarity to it, if I would sum it up. I'd say there was clarity. They were known to the people, those trumpet sounds, and to God. And so it is today with whatever part we have or choose to take part in loud acclamations and in trumpeting to God. It's known to us when we sing the same hymn together. When we listen to special music, we listen to the shofar. You know, the Samaritan lifted up his cry because the volume expressed the intensity of his plea, which probably came from the intensity of the pain physically and emotionally. He lifted it up as evidence of his desire to be delivered from it. He wasn't inhibited. One chance in his life to be healed, and he wasn't going to let it pass. Wow. And then he glorified God with a loud acclamation, which again, that expressed his sincerity and the volume of his joy and rejoicing and desire then to glorify God. You know, God's nature and God's culture is not American. It's not German. It's not English. It's not Judaism. God's nature and God's culture is His, and we find that in the Scriptures. Trumpets are a reminder to make our praises and our prayers meaningful and certain, recognizable from our heart, recognizable to God that this comes from way deep, and I can hear it clear up here in heaven. Oh, we could whisper and He could hear it. Make our praises and our prayers meaningful and certain. I think if we learn to not hold back our zeal as we respond to God, I see that He will respond more to us. Can I have time for a couple psalms? I'll be brash enough to take it, Psalm 81. We were there before. Psalm chapter 81. We looked at the first verse. You know, I might ask just rhetorically, maybe some of you can give me feedback. I'd like to know what people think and believe. I have my beliefs, but are the Psalms the same authority as the statutes and the commandments? I believe they're the Word of God and that all of it was written for our instruction in righteousness. But have we ever looked at the Psalms and some of these other writings as God's commandments, again, for our good? Something to think about and consider. Psalm chapter 81, verse 1. Sing aloud to God our strength. Make a joyful shout to the God of Jacob. Raise a song and strike the timbrel, the pleasant harp with the lute, and blow the trumpet at the time of the new moon. And so we heard it. And at the full moon, which will be Feast of Tabernacles. I hope it's heard there. And then they put this German word in here, our solemn feast day. Well, we should take it serious, I agree. But it's for our rejoicing. The feasts are showing us God's incredible plan to release us from our inhibitions, you know, to what I inherited from my parents. I repent of what I do, but I also have to repent of what I am, what I've become. Some of it I've inherited, physically, some of I've inherited, you know, watching as I grew up, and I get habits and I get ideas that this is the way it ought to be. And my wife and I, we used to talk a lot about it, tease each other. We each had our supposedes. You know, you're supposed to do this and you're supposed to do that. We're still hung up on some of the supposedes, but, you know, they're our own personal view of what we thought life ought to operate like in our little world. But God has a different plan. He says, do this on this great feast day, for this is a statute for Israel. And it's a law, which is actually, the word means judgment, of the God of Joseph. And he established it in Joseph, God of Jacob, and he established it in Joseph for a testimony. So here we see the statutes and the judgments and the testimonies tied in with the feast day, especially the Feast of Trumpets and the Feast of Tabernacles. These things are full of life for us. We see the New Testament examples that help us to put meat on the bones of some of these things that we want to understand deeper. And so the story of the 10 lepers and the one Samaritan who gave us that story. What a beautiful story. How far do I want to go in that? Verse 7, you called in trouble and I delivered you. Ah, see, I heard the trumpet and I delivered you. I answered you in the secret place of thunder. I proved you at the waters of Meribah. Verse 10, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Open your mouth wide and I will fill it with Torah. Loud acclamations, joyful shouts, done respectfully, considering one another, but also considering what God has done for us. Psalm chapter 89. Psalm chapter 89, just verse 15. Blessed are the people who know the Torah, the joyful sound. Blessed, happy, blessed by God. And so we gave our offering in accordance with how much we felt God has blessed us. Are we happy? Do we have joy? Do we obey that statute to rejoice and express joy at the feast? What a beautiful picture. Psalm chapter 98. I am just about done with my water, so I'm just about done. Psalm chapter 98, verse 1. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. And I just feel the energy that goes into these verses. The joy in my inhibition, I'm learning to walk on it, to just tread on it. For he has done marvelous things. The testimonies of what God has done are the memorials that we remember as we sound our trumpets. Is to be a memorial. His right hand and his holy arm have gained him the victory. The Lord has made known his salvation, his Yeshua, his Jesus. Let the multitude of isles be glad. You know, the whole world's going to rejoice when finally Christ comes with that last trump. They might not right away, but they will. They get to. Clouds and darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. A fire goes before him and burns up his enemies round about. And you know, that's good news for us. And actually, it'll be good news for the enemies too. That when they finally are resurrected again, they'll realize who it was. I think they'll be more likely to hear and to listen at that time. His lightnings light the world, the earth sees and trembles, the mountains melt like wax at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the Lord of the whole earth. The heavens declare his righteousness, and all the people see his glory. Kind of sounds like Revelation, doesn't it? And other places. Let all be put to shame who serve carved images, who boast of idols. Worship him, all you gods. Zion hears and is glad, and the daughters of Judah rejoice because of your judgments, O Lord. For you, Lord, are most high above all the earth. You are exalted far above all gods. He wasn't afraid to put it in writing so we could sing these things, so we can study them, so we can put them into our heart in place of whatever's been in our hearts. You who love the Lord, hate evil. He preserves the souls of his saints. You know, I'm in Psalm 97, aren't I? Yes, thank you. Yes, it does. Appreciate your patience. But somebody, Robert, could have stuck his tongue out at me. Yep, he preserves the souls of his saints and delivers them out of the hand of the wicked. The theme over and over again, we hear it. Light is sown for the righteous and gladness for the upright in heart. Rejoice in the Lord, you righteous, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holy name. Remember, the feast of Teruah was to be a feast of memorial. And then, oh, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have gained him the victory over the old dead Fred. And whatever troubles you've had with you or with anyone else, or that we will have. The Lord has made known again his Yeshua, his Jesus. His righteousness he has openly shown in the sight of the nations. He's not afraid to show Jesus. He has remembered his mercy and his faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Shout joyfully to the Lord of all the earth. Break forth in song and rejoice and sing praises and sing to the Lord with the harp and the sound of a psalm, with trumpets and the sound of a horn. Shout joyfully before the Lord the King. Wow. Let the sea, see, the whole world will shout. I have a list somewhere, I don't know where I put it, of all the passages that talks about nature itself, this creation responding to God with shouts and claps and singing, the waters and the trees and the forests and the animals, none of it inhibited, but giving glory to God because they're delivered. Wow. Let the sea roar in all its fullness, the world and those who dwell in it. Let the rivers clap hands. Let the hills be joyful together before the Lord, for he is coming to judge the earth. Wow. We're being judged now. With righteousness he shall judge the world, and you and me with his equity. You know, God hears. God expects a certain sound. God recognizes certain sounds. He recognizes heartfelt praise and prayer and singing. He hears, he recognizes and remembers, so he sends his salvation, his Yeshua. Now we get to give God the glory. And how was it written? I should have saved my page. The question now is, with how loud a voice will we glorify God?